If you're looking for someone whose experience threads through many of the twists and turns of Bitcoin SV history, then look no further than Darren Kellenschweiler, aka Degen. From pre-fork London meetups to his own BSV product, Baymail, to co-founding the blockchain developer Elas, and now at the BSV Association, Darren was there. It was great to spend time with him, looking back and looking forward.
You're listening to CoinGeek Conversations with Charles Miller.
So, Darren, very nice to see you again after rather a long time.
Yeah.
You've moved to the States.
Pleasure to be back in London.
Great. Well, I wanted to go back in time to the end of 2018, because that's when we first met. And you ran some meetings in London, London meetups for Bitcoin.
Yes.
And at the time, first of all, you attended as an ordinary attendee. And then you took over and started running them. So, but that was the time of the actual split between BCH and BSV, I think. And
right.
Take us back to those days. What was going on in the world of Bitcoin at that time?
Wow. So everything was a little tumultuous and people were going in different sort of ideological stances. And it was all very strong arguments over a beer. That's the sort of atmosphere at that time. It was the hash wars and that sort of situation.
And right? In terms of those meetups, you ended up running the Bitcoin SV side of things.
I did, yeah.
And then the people who turned up could choose whether they were going to go to the Bitcoin SV ones or the BCH ones.
Exactly, yeah. We gave everyone a choice. You know, it was all free choice. We didn't steer things in one direction or the other.
What was the sort of relative turnout for those two choices then?
I don't know on the BCH side because
you weren't talking to them any longer.
I was talking to them as individuals, but I had made my mind up. I mean, years previous that this chap, Dr. Wright, is the inventor of Bitcoin. So I didn't really waste my time with the crowd that were somehow rebelling against him. Almost felt like they were rebelling against their own father or something like that. You know, just like. That was their mindset. They didn't like the authority figure. But it was a great turnout in the BSV space. I remember I was working in the building above where the meetup was for my day job at the time.
Which was?
So I was in B2B marketing. I was working for a video marketing platform called BrightTalk. And I was running these events really as a way to generate content and have events that were sort of relevant to me in terms of my interest and bringing that into my current role. The truth being that I only took that job in London to get to London so that I could be near Enchain.
But you had a technology background? Or?
Yeah, so I trained as an electronics engineer. So it was very technical. And in any job I had previously had, I was always the tech guy that would solve problems with code for whatever problem of the day.
So, okay. So when you look back on those heady days of the sort of emergence of Bitcoin SV, how do you feel about it now? Were people, did everybody know where this was going, or was it just a sort of...
It was a leap of faith.
Right.
We really didn't know for sure in terms of how the wider ecosystem would respond to... at the time, it was very tumultuous, right? And also like, there wasn't a lot of public detail with respect to the evidence for, Craig having invented Bitcoin, and that how it was supposed to work was really much more of a debate rather than just something that was like clear and set in stone. So that's when that sort of marketing campaign came from the BA back at that time.
Bitcoin Association.
So the Bitcoin is set in stone. The protocol doesn't change and that sort of thing. I feel now things are just so much clearer. It's a very tumultuous time.
Right. So 5 years later, a lot of water under the bridge.
Yeah.
But has there been more or less progress, would you say, in those 5 years than you expected?
I would say that it has been a bumpy ride. This stuff is very difficult to explain to people who function in normal society, and a little bit easier to explain to people who are working on the finer details of computers. Mm. So you'll find that most of the people who get it quicker are electronics engineers, computer scientists, physicists, that type of brain. So that was never going to be an easy process. And to answer your question more, the pace has been, frankly, excruciatingly slow. But as someone who sort of didn't really know but saw this happening, I expected it to happen quicker.
Go back into history, you came up with Baymail,
yeah,
which was a form of email which involved micropayments.
Yes.
And that worked. People started using it, but we're not using Baymail instead of Gmail these days.
Right.
What was the story about the sort of the history of Baymail then?
Yeah, so the Baymail was my first application. It was something that I learned how to code by building a use case. So I wanted to solve my own problem, and I thought that it might also apply to other people. I don't like spam. I hate reading emails that are not relevant to me. So I thought, attach some value to it. We'll create this thing called inbox economics, where the highest in the inbox is the person who paid you the most for you to read it. And so that had really quick adoption when it was first released as a sort of beta application. People seem to love the concept. And it's certainly not a new concept entirely. It's something that Craig has spoken about videos of the past. I think it's something that also has been mentioned by people like Adam Back in terms of, I think his idea was trying to use hash power to prove that sometimes.
But you actually made it work.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what I love doing is just proving use cases.
So it was widespread adoption, but amongst quite a small circle of people, I guess.
Yeah. At the time, the sort of online BSV community was, I don't know, it felt like it was about 1,000 people or something like that. Not many people. And all the feedback I was getting was, this is the best app on Bitcoin. It's great. It's like, this gets Bitcoin. And even back then, I was building in a way that didn't involve a node, which is what I do now for the Bitcoin Association.
So let's just look at that, because micropayments are always said to be the absolute key to Bitcoin SV's success.
Right.
And yet, I've always been slightly skeptical that anybody will pay for something that they don't have to pay for, even if it's a minute amount of money. And what are the lessons from Baymail's history about people wanting to add micropayments to something they do already, would you say?
I would say, from my perspective, the problem was that it wasn't just built into existing email clients. So at the time, I remember looking at Superhuman, which is perhaps not a commonly known email client, but it's a sort of Silicon Valley expensive monthly, I think it was like $30 a month just for an email client, which seems like, why would anyone pay for that? But loads of execs did, because the interface was so much faster. So it saved them a lot of time. So I think the lesson is that if it were built into ultra-fast email clients and people really just had it as like a ticky box extra feature, then perhaps that's the route to market. But in terms of why it didn't see wide adoption is because I didn't know how to build wallets at the time. I was really relying on the backbone of infrastructure that MoneyButton had created, and that RelayX had created as wallets in the ecosystem that supported application developers. So they did some of the hard security work that you need in wallet infrastructure and allowed new web app developers like me to come in and just slap an app together very quickly and not be too concerned about security, because that was all handled by these professionals that spent a lot of time and got their degrees in cryptography to really solve these problems with well-maintained libraries. So I think that reliance on the third party for the security aspect of things sort of hamstrung me a little bit with Baymail's development thereafter, because it meant that we were stuck with that subset of overall Bitcoin users.
The only people who could use it had to have a MoneyButton wallet or a...
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that was a subset of the tiny subset that is people who are using BSV at the time,
right,
in comparison to people who use email, which is obviously billions of people.
Yes. But so anyway, you must have learned a massive amount out of
absolutely.
That experience. And so how did you what happened after that that brought you to where you are today?
Right, yeah. So actually, it was in London conference that I was sort of selling Baymail on stage kind of thing. And I met Brendan Lee, who was interested in it, bought it, and sort of acqui-hired me, essentially. So I started working for Elast Digital, who I'm still with just now. It was a couple of months after they just started. So I'm a co-founder, but I was a little late to the party.
Right.
So I'd been working as their CTO since. They were building MetaNet applications. And one of the things that I had sort of sprinted ahead with is figuring out how to host entire websites on this abstract concept that is MetaNet, which is a sort of brow-furrowing sentence, I realize. So it was super esoteric at the time, but like attempting to get third parties to host things by putting parts of the website into Bitcoin transactions and then hosting these websites from Explorer APIs like What's on Chain. So, but it could be hosted by anyone who has Bitcoin data. So it was kind of like a decentralized website in some sense.
So you continued your BSV journey. And anyway, now you're at the Bitcoin Association.
Right.
You've got a very interesting job title at Bitcoin Association, yeah. Which you told me, but I've instantly forgotten because it's so complicated.
Yeah, quite understandable.
What is it?
So I'm a technical lead of the utilization value stream.
Right.
Yeah.
Or TLUVS, perhaps.
Yeah. I tried to get sign off on that and everyone's just like, well, whatever.
Okay. So what does that mean?
So it means that I have my finger in many pies. It means that I'm trying to help all of the more business-focused people who manage the products and services that the Bitcoin Association is involved in, which is actually that we sort of took on a lot of the stuff that Tal was previously running when it was public. So that's been a process, right? That's not something that happens quickly. So I'm familiar with all these things because I used them. So I know how they work already because I was on the user side for the most part anyway, but it wasn't the same the other way around. So I think that's probably why they ended up saying, well, if you're up for the task, right. You can kind of help.
But what is value stream then?
Right. Well, I think it's a buzzword in management consulting, probably, to do with how you organize a business, right? We're oriented towards certain creation of value and those values.
Which comes in streams. There's a stream here that does this and a stream here that does that.
We're streaming value to the users of Bitcoin. That's the idea. Right. So,
but what I don't quite understand is what is the relationship of the Bitcoin Association, which is a sort of industry body, to the individual commercial enterprises that you're taking an interest in?
Yeah. So, I mean, so the Bitcoin Association have a duty to the users of Bitcoin to ensure that the user experience is maintained at least at the current level. My understanding is that, and I'm not a lawyer, but we have lawyers on the team who have explained this to me. My understanding of that is that we cannot deteriorate their experience by sort of changing things in Bitcoin that would create a loss for their business, right? So we have some responsibility to the users. And this could be regular day-to-day users as well as businesses that have built on BSV. We have a responsibility to them to ensure that what they've built and what they have in terms of BSV holdings, that doesn't deteriorate time.
But it being set in stone then, as we've heard so much about, that doesn't answer that question then.
Well, if we were to change some of the software such that it was completely unusable or much like Blockstream have done, sort of impede the center of the network to sell our businesses that are surrounding the network that then fix the problems
we created. So the protocol itself could be set in stone, but all these more peripheral aspects could change.
The protocol's not human. Right. So it doesn't really decide anything.
No, but what I mean is
if we change it, then it could break things.
But isn't there a commitment not to change it?
Yes, of course. But humans have to make that commitment. And technology changes around that commitment. So, as new, more efficient computers get developed, maybe you want to do things in a slightly different way. We have to improve the infrastructure. We might move to IPv6 as a way to transmit blocks in different ways, or transactions in different ways, Merkle trees, subtrees.
It slightly reminds me of when they brought out new versions of Windows. Yeah. They always had to be compatible, or they made a commitment for them to be compatible with apps that had worked on earlier versions.
Right.
And that made Windows more and more complicated.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good point. Although I don't know what the Windows contract is, because who would read those terms? But perhaps they did have something in there saying if this breaks your software, which presumably it did for some poor, smaller software development firms, maybe there is some...
I think a lot of app developers were not very pleased about how that actually turned out in practice, probably.
Probably. It cost them a lot to redevelop the things.
But. Yeah. So Bitcoin Association, then, that's your main job. You've given me a sort of like an overview of that role, but what would you sort of be doing on a Monday morning? Are you working in detail with individual businesses, or how does it work?
So I mostly work with internal teams. So we do have sort of regular catch-up meetings, which I don't particularly like, to be honest. I'll mention the work that I do like. Like most sort of techie people, I really like hard problems, and I like going for hours and hours on one single problem. So the sort of thing I might do for the BA is take a look at all of the different wallets in the space, map out their architecture, talk to the individual developers who have built them, do some sort of comparative analysis, and figure out what really defines a wallet, how might best we communicate that to the wider ecosystem and new developers, so that we can make clear what problems have already been solved and communicate that clearly to the rest of the ecosystem. So documentation, it might be architecture diagrams, it might be guiding the development team, setting out the roadmap for, okay, having conversations with Craig about this is how this should have been done, this is how it is at the moment. Sometimes explaining to Craig, the thing that you told people to do, what they've done is completely different. And so here's how I propose we actually get on board with what
you originally
said.
It sounds like there's quite a sort of strong diplomatic component to this work.
Definitely. Yeah, that's been mentioned. I always get shoved into the room when diplomacy is required.
Oh, well, that's a compliment, I would say.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Well, Darren, it's been fantastic to catch up. And in 5 years' time, we'll do it again, and there'll be another whole story to tell. But
sounds great.
Great to see you again. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Charles.
Thanks.
Thanks very much to Darren Kellenschweiler. Next week, I'll be finding out more about one part of Darren's work at ELAS, because my guest is another of that business's co-founders, Mohammed Jabbour. So please join Mohammed and me next week for another CoinGeek conversation. Until then, thank you for listening, and from me, Charles Miller, goodbye.